that your thoughts and your emotions have a physiological effect, whether you like it or not, whether you see it or not, whether you sense it or not. Every thought that you're putting out is doing something. It's not disappearing, not because it's abstract that it's gone, like it dissolves. It stays there. In fact, that's how we get sick. You know, this information is going inside our cells. So the first thing is to begin to accept the fact that this is a real phenomenon. The fact that scientists are still trying to figure it out doesn't mean that that much is not true. And the validation, again, is in the movie and the work of so many other scientists. The second thing is, throughout the day, begin to notice what you're thinking about and how you're feeling. You know, people, it seems like a simple thing to do, but how many people are really, really, really not only noticing, but doing something about it?
Welcome everyone to another amazing episode of the Human Experience podcast. My name is Eldin Hasse, your host. As you all know, I'm in London, England. And first, before I invite our guest today to join us, I'd like to thank all my listeners and all my viewers. And we have about 3 million or just over 3 million of you internationally. And thanks to you, we have been voted as the top 10 educational podcast in the United States. So very much appreciate all your love and support, all your emails, all your comments, sharing my podcast with your loved ones. So I'm very excited to bring on today. My guest is Caroline Corey, and she's an award-winning filmmaker, best-selling author, and the founder of Omnimum Media. She has done films, she has spoken and lectured internationally on human consciousness, amongst many other topics. And I'd like to invite Caroline to come on and introduce herself in her own words, and then we can dive deeper into all the amazing work that she's been doing over the years. So welcome, Caroline.
Hey, Eldin, thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had the chance to watch your recent movie, but I know that you've been doing this work for many years. And one of the topics which you lecture and you teach, it's sort of scientific approach and explanation about the human consciousness. And I know this is a sort of topic very dear to you. So tell us a little bit more about what inspired you to be on this amazing journey, and then you can tell us all about this amazing work that you do.
Yeah, thank you. So everything started at a very young age. I was 5 years old, and I started to have spontaneous experiences. I would look at someone and I could tell what was wrong with them, what they were thinking about. I would just kind of notice things kind of in the subtle energy field, and predict things and things like that. And of course, then I would have validation that I was right. I could sometimes see on the other side of a wall, okay, what is there? And then I would kind of see things, you know, beyond what normal people could see. And so because of that, because it just came spontaneously, obviously I was 5 years old, right? I started to think about, okay, well, how did I do this? What did I do? Am I crazy or something's wrong with my brain? You know, because that's what you think, you know, that's the first thing you think about. So, because of that, I got into academically in the field of psychology, but it wasn't enough, really. It was more the study of consciousness that brought more answers, even though scientists don't know what consciousness is, and there's a whole debate about it. So scientists still don't know a lot about consciousness, but because of that, I wanted to understand more the mechanics of it. How is it possible that we can have a telepathic message? Where did it come from? Did I make this up? But then how come it becomes true? So then, you know what I mean? So because of that, I got into this field of consciousness for literally like 20 years. And then I developed methodologies for healing, but also for people to also tap into that information spontaneously, like I did. And so I started teaching hundreds of people around the world, helping so many people. And of course, we get validation. We get proof that this is real. And so at one point, I said, you know, we need to put this out in the mainstream, you know, like we need to bring it to the awareness of the general public. And the best way to do that is to bring in science. Because, you know, because people would say, well, this is kind of woo-woo stuff. We're not sure. It's not. So I started to research and work with scientists. I mean, we're talking Harvard and Stanford. You know, it's not some guy in his garage. I mean, no offense. But, you know, I mean, these are reputable scientists who were also investigating consciousness, the effect of mind over matter. Can we think that this water needs, I want to change the pH in this water and then it does change? Is that possible? Can I look at this object and move it? Is that possible? So we've done many, many, many experiments in laboratories. I'm not the first one. There's a lot of evidence out there. People don't realize that, you know.
I actually teach about the same topic and for the last 15 years. So absolutely, there are so many people, even Einstein and people like him and before him have been teaching about the same topic. But what you did, I guess you have helped to use the science to demystify the mystical kind of thing, isn't it? Because if you just come from sort of spiritual side, people will say, oh, this is a bit woo-woo, you know, out there. But as you said, you know, there is a peer-reviewed science that you've used with like reputable scientists from Stanford and Harvard. And then you've done so many experiments too. And now you teach people how to do the same. So it's not just here is the information, you understand it analytically and read the theory and hypothesis. You can actually follow the steps and teach yourself how to do the same.
Exactly, exactly. So when you do it in a laboratory setting, you know, you have controls and you have baselines, and then you have results. You have accurate results that show the measurable results that show the interaction of mind and the matter, the object, over and over. Then you start to have scientific validation. And so because we've done so many, we've done experiments with water, with objects, with DNA, with electrical devices, all sorts of things. Then you start to realize, okay, this is a real phenomenon. We still don't understand how it's working, how my mind is changing, but there is a measurable time correlation between the moment that I look at the object and it changes, it records something different until I stop looking at it. So that's how, you know, for people who don't know, but when we do a scientific experiment, we create baselines, meaning let's say I'm trying to change the pH in this water. So we take the measurements of this pH over a long period of time. We don't just all of a sudden pretend, you know, hope that it will work and that's it. And so we have those measurements over several days, several hours before the experiment. And exactly, let's say at 3 o'clock, from 3 o'clock to 3:15, I attempt through my focus to change the pH and it starts to go up or down or whatever my intention is. And then when I stop looking at it, it goes back to the baseline. Then we have to repeat it again. So that means it is repeatable over and over. That's how we get real scientific validation.
Amazing. Amazing. And may I ask you, when you set an intention, let's say water, right? Do you couple that with in this particular type of emotion and feeling, or is just a thought
and intention? Yeah, it's actually several things at the same time. Because I've done this so much, I've developed a methodology to do any sort of mind-matter interaction. So there's a lot that goes into it. First of all, you have to be in a sort of a meditative state in the sense that you clear your mind, so you can focus. So you have a stronger connection, if you will, with the object. Then you have to address the belief systems, because if from the get-go, I don't believe I'm going to succeed, then that's probably going to interfere, you know? So I have to, before starting, I have to address, how am I feeling about this? Am I 100%, you know, do I want, you know, if I don't succeed, you know, do I feel like a failure? You know, all of these things you bring up, you address, and you clear. You have to get your energy or your state of consciousness to a very neutral place. You're almost detached. You're almost like, I'm doing this for fun and that's what I want, but whatever happens, happens. Kind of a
So the analytical mind is no longer there, no judgment, no analysis. You are sort of in, you become an observer, objectively looking at it rather than subjectifying through many filters and, you know, these voices in your head, isn't it? So, yeah, it's exactly. Incredible. And so you mentioned water, you mentioned objects, and, you know, from your experience, does this work on like a larger objects as well or just smaller? And does it work only when an observer like you and with your scientist, when you are in the same room with the object or maybe even a person, or can it be done remotely? Because, I can tell you about some of the stuff that I've done, which can be done remotely. But what is your experience?
Yeah, so we've done this, of course, in person, that's how you start, sort of, just to have some sort of connection with the object or the water, whatever system you're working with. And then eventually we put it in a Faraday cage, which takes out the possibility, the probability that it is the electromagnetic field that is making the object move or behave a certain way. Then we do it long distance. And so in the movie, I'm talking about this latest movie that we did mention, actually. That's how I got to making this movie, which is Superhuman, The Wow. Invisible Made Visible. That's the title of the film. So we do several experiments on camera, and it was fascinating because, of course, we did it in person under, you know, glass, for example, and then in a Faraday cage, and then we do it long distance. So just to kind of negate the idea that it is electromagnetic, because when you can do something long distance, then it's not the electromagnetic field that has, you know, at least not non-locally, that's for sure. But what was very interesting, because you said, can you do it with small objects or large objects? What I started to realize when I first started out, it was very interesting. I first started with it was a DNA sample. So I worked with one of the scientists at the time, Glenn Ryan. He's a quantum biologist, okay. And Harvard, that sort of medical school and that sort of level. But anyway, so we set up an experiment with DNA, and that was the very first one I did. And I didn't know like what to expect. You know, the idea was to take this DNA sample and to attempt to increase the electricity, the electrical conductivity in that sample. And so the idea is they noticed that when you do that, when the electrical conductivity is faster, then the DNA starts to change shape. It turns into from a double helix to a torus shape, and it starts to self-repair. So that's why, you know, the idea of increasing the electricity, the electrical conductivity was interesting. So here I am, you know, the first time, you know, I'm looking at this DNA sample thinking, okay, so what do I focus on? Do I focus on, you know, electricity going through it? Do I focus on do I visualize, you know, a number, you know, like, because we take measurement, like I was saying, we take measurements in the baseline, over and over and over. So do I visualize that this number increased, you know, because there's different ways. And the clearer, the more, specific you are, the more efficient you're going to be. Because otherwise your mind is going all over the place. And it's like, do I do this? Do I do? Before you begin, you have to be clear. That's what I learned. Eventually, I became very, very focused. And literally, I was able to change it, to increase it by, that was the very first time, by 400% in seconds. So we were blown away. Even this, of course, we did that over and over, like I said, with baseline. So we're like, wow, this is crazy. And it kept happening very, very quickly, very large magnitudes with the DNA. Then I started working with the water, and I started working with electrical device, you know, trying to affect an electronic device. The experience was very different. It was kind of like, the DNA responded even before I even did anything. It was fascinating, Eldon. It's like it kind of knew what I was going to do. You know what I mean? So that was incredibly fascinating. Consistently, every time I work with DNA or even water, it was that speed, that response. But then when I worked with an electrical device, it was slightly different. It was more like, I was making something. It wasn't an even exchange. It was kind of like I was pushing something, I was doing something. But then when we got to a physical object, moving a piece of paper, that was a whole different animal. All of a sudden, you know, I was kind of expecting the same thing as the DNA or something. I would look at that piece of paper, trying to make it to rotate, right? And then it wouldn't. So then it was like, I would tell it, okay, rotate to the right. And then it would rotate to the left, or it wouldn't rotate. And then so it was very interesting. I had to kind of readjust the way I was interacting with the physical object. It's as if that physical object had, I want to say ego, like as if it had a personality. Like it was, wow. It was telling me, yeah, it was so fascinating. It was telling me like, I don't want to rotate, right? I don't want to move right now or something like that. There was a resistance, which is so interesting. So I had to get it to study that, and it was consistent with physical object. So I have to kind of adjust because I'm extremely sensitive, obviously, and kind of notice what was coming from that object that needed to be to shift so that, you know, the interaction would work faster, the response would work. And so why is that? I was thinking, and I think it's because the DNA, obviously it's a biological system. We're made of DNA. We are DNA, but we're not a piece of paper. So the interaction of the two substances is different. And I think there is kind of, we have to understand that our consciousness interacts with different things in different ways. And there is information in everything that you're interacting with. So you have to tap into that information in order for you to maneuver and affect it.
It's almost like a turning the dial in the correct frequency, correct station, yeah. Kind of radio, yeah. Station. So one is for DNA, and for water, perhaps there is some similarity. And obviously, yeah. If you are interacting with another human being, you know, we are made, 75% of water, and obviously our DNA. So, you know, it's fascinating. But when you mention DNA, I've read a study about the also, you know, using a similar approach. It was a scientific experiment. They invited a group of sort of people who were experts on prayer and meditation, right?
Yes.
So they say, okay, we give you this DNA in front of you, and we want you to set an intention to make DNA sort of wind and unwind, kind of like change shape and move, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And nothing happened. They say, okay, now don't do the intention, don't do the thinking, do the emotion, you know? Mm. Will it through your emotion? Yes. Nothing happened. Then they say, okay, couple the intention, the thought with the emotion, and do it, and then just kept moving. And then they increased the distance from, they said they put it in some remote location, and they did the same, instantaneous. There was, so they said there is no time and space as we know it. It's like literally, so what you are describing, so just to sort of reiterate to our listeners and viewers, basically there is a field of universal consciousness or field of energy that we are constantly interacting with, that how we think and how we feel and what we do has an impact on every single atom in our lives and also all around us. But what Caroline is doing, she's consciously choosing to actually do this as she is interacting to actually produce the results that, or, you know, desired results, right? So it's not like, oh, by accident, things are happening. You are actually willing them to actually happen in the way, because you've realized that we as humans, we are limitless and powerful beyond measure.
Exactly. So it's funny you mentioned this, the emotion. So in the movie, we did a telekinesis experiment. So we invited a friend of mine. She had never done anything like this before. And that was the idea. We invited different guests in the movie, and we did different experiments on camera for people to see that anybody can do this, you know, because if we bring, you know, always a shaman or like somebody, you know what I mean, who's training, people would say, well, he's trained, you know, I can never do that. So we invited normal people, you know, to participate. And so this was Rachel in the movie, that people will see that. So we taught her in a couple hours, you know, a little bit, how to move a physical object. It was, again, a piece of paper that would rotate on a, like a pin type thing. And so we gave her some, like a guideline, general guidelines. And then we put it under a glass object. You know, that was the first attempt. Eventually we did it long distance, but for her, it was the first one. So we have these two pieces of paper under the glass. And, you know, she was trying to connect with them, trying to say, move, 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 nothing for the longest time. So we were all like, and don't forget, this is a movie, right? So we're paying people, you know, to roll cameras. We have like six cameras. We have an entire crew. Not the best conditions to concentrate, you know, because everybody's focused on, you know, is she going to do it? Is this going to work? You know, so I had to do a lot of clearing in the room as well before we did this experiment. But even with that, it's the, you know, you have the cameras, you have the electromagnetic of, you know, because of the equipment. Anyway, so she did her best, you know, and nothing was happening. And all of a sudden, she said, you know what? Like she had her hands on the glass. And then all of a sudden she just pulled away and she said, you know what? She looked at those two pieces of paper and she said, I'm just going to play. I'm going to give them names. So she called one, I don't know, Juliet, and the other one, I don't know, Antoinette or something. I don't remember the names, but so Bob and Julie or something. I don't remember. Anyway, so she started talking to them as if the piece of paper were little people. And then she'd say, okay, Bob, you know, how are you feeling today? And things like that in her mind, right? And then she just basically waited and waited. And then she said, you know, I'm just going to give you love. I'm going to give you love. And Eldon, I swear, the second she said the word love, those things started to move like crazy. And it was perfectly still, like for the longest time. And the more she gave love, she said love and joy and let's have fun. And I'm sending you all my love. This thing was going crazy. And also, don't forget, you know, people think, oh, maybe it's the heat of the body. You're not going to have that much power, you know, the heat of the body affecting a piece of paper under a glass that's been still for so long. And when you look at it, you'll see it in a movie. It rotates in one direction, then it stops. Then it rotates in another direction, and then it stops. And then a little bit more, and it stops. So what I'm saying is, if it was heat or electromagnetism, like it wouldn't even move that way. It would You know what I mean? So that was fascinating to watch. And so this tells us, like you were saying, the emotion, the feeling, it's not just the intention, it's the feeling and the emotion that you put out are also very important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love that. I got to watch this. I'm going to watch it as soon as possible. I'm going to ask you to share with me the links and where I can go, and I'm going to sit with the family. But what I want to say, I mean, it's, you know, there has been so many experiments, you know, out there for like, you know, thousands of years, even in the last sort of couple of hundred years, that, you know, the Japanese scientist, Dr. Masumo Emoto, he did experiments with water and with rice and many other things, you know, and how our emotions, you know, affect the, you know, on a cellular level, you know, like the DNA of the different, like how it affects matter. And, you know, and also everyone knows, like, you know, if you are a gardener or you know anything about plants, when you talk to plants, you set an intention and your language and your emotions are full of love and gratitude and joy and happiness, you actually have a direct impact on these plants, how they grow. You know, as you clean in the leaves, you talk into them, you actually, the plants, they flourish, they grow. And at the same time, if you're doing the opposite, if you are, you know, having the, you know, sort of negative emotions and, you know, you are ignoring them, you know, not doing anything. And that's what I say, like, if imagine the impact you have on the plants, you have the same impact on other human beings, right? So when, you know, because as you say, you're very sensitive. Most people are, to a degree, quite sensitive to other people's energy, other people's, you know, sort of emotions and thoughts and feelings, but maybe they can't put the finger on it. And so let's try to, now for our listeners, ask your expert opinion in how what you just described, how does that, you know, impact an average person out there? What are the kind of thoughts and intentions and emotions and feelings they should be on the lookout in order for them to have sort of good, peaceful life, happy life, and also, you know, good health and good interaction with other people?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is to realize that this is real. That's the point of our discussion, you know, and the movie is to prove, to show people that your thoughts and your emotions have a physiological effect, whether you like it or not, whether you see it or not, whether you sense it or not. Every thought that you're putting out is doing something. It's not disappearing, not because it's abstract, that it's gone, like it dissolves. It stays there. In fact, that's how we get sick. You know, this information is going inside our cells. So the first thing is to begin to accept the fact that this is a real phenomenon. The fact that scientists are still trying to figure it out doesn't mean that much is not true. And the validation, again, is in the movie, in the work of so many other scientists. The second thing is, throughout the day, begin to notice what you're thinking about and how you're feeling. You know, people, it seems like a simple thing to do, but how many people are really, really, really not only noticing, but doing something about it or doing the opposite? For example, I am at a job that I hate every day. I'm at work because I need the money, but every day I'm constantly frustrated. I can't wait for the time to, you know, to pass. I don't even like the subject of whatever. All of these thoughts and feelings and emotions are going into your cells. They're staying with you. So at the end of the month, when you're getting your paycheck and you're paying rent, you're living in this illusion that, hey, you know, this, you know, paying my rent, therefore I should be happy, ignoring the fact that every single day, the way you really felt is the opposite. So what happens? Same thing with a relationship. Hello, you know, so many people are in a relationship where they think, you know, it's okay. I mean, the girl or the boy, it doesn't matter. You know, my partner, I mean, you know, he takes care of stuff. He's paying the rent and helping me out. And he's, you know, he's taking care of me and whatever. I don't have the real deep love for this person, but maybe it's a different kind of love. Maybe it's just, you know, convenience, and why not? You know, like I can stay in this relationship because it makes sense. It's easy, you know, and I'll also take care of him. It starts to feel more like a roommate. I see so many of this.
Yes.
Roommate situation.
Convenience, right?
Convenience, a roommate situation, but you convince yourself that, hey, why not? It works. But deep, deep inside, you are alone. You feel depressed. I have worked with so many couples like that. Deep inside you, there is a big hole because what you are hoping to achieve through this relationship, which is really a very special connection, a sense of oneness, a sense of deeper love, that's not what's happening. So same thing as with the job. So the outside, the logical thing, I'm paying the rent and I should keep the job or I should keep the girl, you know, is the outside illusion that is so strong sometimes that it convinces you you should be happy.
Yes.
At least you're with someone. At least you have a job. You know, this is all justification.
It's the analytical mind trying to make sense of things, right? Rather than you pausing and saying, actually, what is the objective of why am I doing this? What is the feelings and emotions, like the root cause of what I'm trying to heal, perhaps from, you know, many years ago, or, you know, and do I feel fulfilled? And do I actually experience the kind of love that I truly desire? And as you say, people, they don't ask themselves these kind of questions. And of course, you know, once they become aware of those questions, they can begin the process. That's why they have somebody like you with your expertise to guide them, to teach them.
Yes. So what happens is that deep inside, first of all, people don't ask the questions. When they do ask the question and they really, really tune into the real feeling, not the head, not the logic, not what they think should be okay, you start to realize, wait a minute, this means I have to change.
Ouch. And people dislike change.
Fear. It means that if I really want to be with someone that I truly love, have a job, attract a job that's really who I am, this means this current situation has to change, and all the fears come up, and the fear stops you from making those changes. Then you go back to convincing yourself, yeah, but it's fine. At least I have a job. At least I have a girlfriend. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it goes back to this routine, justifying, you know, that. So what is going to happen? So you're living this outside illusion, and the who you really are is struggling because it's not the real thing.
The two are out of alignment, right?
Exactly. So you keep pretending, you keep shifting, you keep ignoring, you know, a few years later, 5 years later, 20 years later, some people wait that long, you have to hit a wall. I don't know, everybody's rock bottom is in a different, you know, at a different place, but you have to, because it's almost like every day you're lying to yourself.
Yes.
You're lying to yourself. And so at the end, you is spirit, it's consciousness. It's not this body. It's
absolutely
not this aspect.
Yes.
And you came here to be you, to be the true spirit, the true express who you really are, to have authentic feelings and to create from those authentic feelings. And so this will never go away. You can
never
shut it off. You can pretend all you want. At one point, it's going to explode. Unfortunately, at the expense of illness, some accident, some tragedy, because the universal laws support the real you. They don't support the illusion. You can make up the illusion. You can keep being in denial and pretending this and this as long as you want. But the larger aspect of you is constantly reminding you. That's why you have depressions. Why suddenly you have those moments of, what am I doing? What is it? You know? So eventually you came here with a higher purpose.
Absolutely.
This higher purpose is to express your authentic self, to really love, to really attract from that place of love things that are aligned with who you are. Yeah. And so that's the reason why you cannot pretend. It's like you cannot deny you. You know what I mean?
Yes. It's kind of, you have to get out of your own way in a sense. And one thing that I discovered with my clients, and I do a lot of like sort of live events and workshops, is that most people internationally, they have the disease of sense of unworthiness, you know? The root cause of many of their issues is the unworthiness. And a lot of I had clients who've had suffered of like sense of unworthiness and guilt and shame for 40 years, 30 years since childhood. And then, you know, once they begin to shift that, because I say to them, you know, universe only gives you what you believe that you are worthy of receiving. So if you keep reminding, as you say, illusion, if you keep reminding yourself that this illusion is only what you deserve to receive, you know, that's all you're going to get. Because the actual, as you said, the thoughts and emotions, they have the impact also on your physical body, on your health and everything else, but also on every single atom in your life. So when you look at your life and you have less than desirable outcomes in your life, right? It's just the universe. It's like a mirror reflection of your inner state. So it's not that you have to force to change the external in order for you to be happy internally and fulfilled and feel that unconditional love and joy and bliss. Is that you have to, in order for you to have that desired outcome externally, you have to focus internally, do the deep internal work. And you know, and this is scary for a lot of people. So what would you say? And what would you say to somebody who say, okay, you know, I doubled a bit, you know, I've been to a few seminars, I've been to Tony Robbins, I've been to Caroline's workshops, I read her book, and I've been here and I read 200 books. They can tell you all the titles. And I always say to them, I say, okay, great. Now pick one book and tell me a line or a paragraph or a chapter that you've taken the information and then you applied it in your life, and tell me how it changed your life. Oh, I can't do that. What is the purpose of reading? What's the purpose of attending the classes and seminars and workshops and going to India and doing to a retreat and seeing the guru? And what's this the purpose? The purpose is that you acquire the knowledge and then you apply the knowledge in order to change, in order to remove the illusion that you've been living for the last 20 years.
Yes, and also exactly. And that's the thing. The illusion is also, there is no escape. It's almost like you're, as if you're saying, I don't exist. You exist, whether you like it or you exist. And so it's almost like the longer you wait, it's the harder it is. And so you are talking like 99% of the people are living exactly what you just said. Deep inside, they know this isn't 100%, but they're accepting it because, well, or even better, they blame it on the universe. Well, if that's what the universe is bringing to me, then maybe that's my karma or whatever. But wait, you are the one that is putting out what you want from the universe. It's not the other way around. And so that's another kind of escape, you know, answer. And so what I say to these people, what I notice is that and trust me, I've had many, many, many students who, you know, would say or would work on something and then they would drop out, go back to the old pattern. That is just so typical. I think the only time that you're going to succeed is to decide that you are ready, knowing that you have to change things and it's okay. It's not the first time, you know, and you have all the support, all the tools, all the hundreds of people who have gone through the same thing before and not only survived, are now at a much, much, much happier place. It's the beginning. It's like the first step that scares people off and they keep going back to the old pattern. So the first question before you go to a course, just ask yourself, are you ready to change for the better? And there's another thing is a programming. Not only that we are not worthy, but that change is going to be hard and difficult. Of course, change is change. A lot of people don't like change, you know, just go back to the status quo. I keep my balance, you know, this is what I know, this is what I'm comfortable. Hey, it's working. You know, it's that false sense of balance. But, and therefore change is hard and difficult. It's true. There's a transition, you know, there's transition, but they're not looking far enough. They don't realize that after that change or what this change is, first of all, it doesn't have to be that hard because of all the support and tool. But then what this change is bringing to them is a huge amount of joy and freedom because they start to be authentic to who they really are, the feelings that they have towards the work, towards the relationship, towards their parents, towards anything comes out of who they really are, what they really love. And therefore what is coming after that change is a million times better. It has to be.
Absolutely.
So it's absolutely just that first step. Otherwise, save your money, you know.
I find you mentioned, you know, oh, I know this. This is known to me, right?
Yes.
And so when I asked them, okay, so are you ready to change? Yes, I am. I am ready. Are you sure? Yes. And I said, do you know the only place that you can change is in the unknown? So what you know, in order for you to get everything that you desire, all of the things that we described, you will get those things in the unknown, and yeah, it's going to be somewhat uncomfortable. And it's going to feel, you know, especially at the beginning, like you're going 5 steps forward and 3 steps back, but then eventually you're only going steps forward, and then the unknown becomes familiar because the known is familiar. And they say, well, this doesn't feel right, you know, when they begin the change. And I said, yes, no, it's not that it doesn't feel right. It's unfamiliar to you. And because, yeah, we are creatures of habit, we kind of unconsciously want to go back to what we know, even like, you know, the things that we dislike, the guy is treating her badly, and he's, yeah, like talking to her, putting her down, and he's affecting her self-esteem with every, you know, every day with what he says and how he says. And, you know, she's asking for things from him in a way that he pushes his buttons, and they have this sort of emotional volleyball match, you know, every, yeah, single day. And you know, and once she stops and realizes that, you know, as you said, to be her authentic self, she will have to do the work from inside out to change the relationship. Only one has to improve. It doesn't have to be both. And I've had ladies come, oh, teach me the tools so I can go and improve my boyfriend, improve my husband. I said, no, it doesn't work like that. I said, I'm going to help you improve and change. And as a result, your relationship will improve.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I said, don't worry. Don't be scared. You don't need to leave the guy. You know, if you fell in love and he was amazing for the first, you know, 12 months, 2 years, that husband of yours, it's nothing wrong with him. He's still that guy. You just need to find him. And because, yeah, you know, when you change the way you look at things or look at him, you know, he will then begin to, you will get the feedback. This is how it is. You know, the universe is a mirror. You know, if you keep saying, oh, you know, you are this and you are that, or even you just thinking, you're not telling him you are this and you are that, you're just thinking it and feeling it, you are manifesting that. And you say, oh, I'm so unhappy. And then you talk to your girlfriends and you tell everyone, oh, he's this and he's that, and he never does this and he always this. And I said, take it easy, change. Yeah. You know, you got to change, and then you will get. So it doesn't, the answer isn't to, you know, get a divorce. The answer isn't to change the boyfriend or whatever. You might have children with this person, right? Or girlfriend or husband, whatever it is, you know. So the work, the deep inner work is the key and the foundation. And what I'm understanding from Caroline is that, you know, you got to first have an analytical understanding about who and what you truly are. That we are this powerful consciousness that, you know, we have the body, we have the 3D body, which, you know, we interact with the 3D world, but this is only a small aspect of who and what we truly are. And majority of who and what we truly are and how we create things in our life isn't coming from the 3D body. It's coming from the consciousness and from this higher place of the intentions and emotions. And you are actually, maybe you are not sitting down and trying to, you know, make the DNA move and the paper, and but maybe you are. Maybe you are not aware. You are doing it every single day.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're living a tug of war all the time, tug of war between the illusion and what you really want. Having said that, another thing that I find a lot, I'm sure you too in your work, is I have people who say, oh, but I've tried. I've gone and, we went to couple therapy or whatever, you know, whatever.
And it didn't work.
Yeah. And didn't work. Therefore, maybe that's all I can get, you know, maybe this is my fate. That's another crazy thing, because, you know, the fact that whatever you did didn't work doesn't mean that it didn't work. It means that you didn't do the work that was relevant or necessary. That's all it means. And so that's another thing that people get discouraged when you talk about change. They say, but I tried this and it didn't work, and therefore that's it. Going back to the worthiness. And sometimes, you know, you just mentioned, you don't, it depends, you know, you don't have to quit your job. You don't have to quit the relationship, but sometimes you do. And that's what's so scary. That's another reason why it's so scary, because the person in the change, they're afraid to realize that they have been living the illusion and they're going to have to let it go. Let go of what's known and comfortable so that they can attract the new job that's aligned, the new boyfriend that's really aligned with who they are, what they really want. And so I think that's the problem, is those belief systems that whatever you did in the past, it, you know, did this, and I don't want to give it up. You know, they kind of hold on to that. And you can justify and rationalize it in so many ways. But going back to the work that we were talking about, the mind matter thing, why did I make this movie? I mean, it's not like, you know, we didn't even talk about this, but at the end of the movie, I show people who are completely blindfolded and who are able to read. They teach themselves to read, to see things with that, without their eyes, basically, to see behind their head. So why am I doing this film? You know, it's not like, you know, we have eyes. We don't need to put blindfolds on and train ourselves. We don't have to be moving a piece of paper. What's the piece of paper? That's not the point. The point is to show how powerful your mind is. And so just like you go to the gym and you try different machines, you know, to train your body, these are just validation proofs and exercises to train your mind to believe in yourself that you can create the outcome you want. That's the idea. When I'm focusing on the water, saying, I want the water pH to change. I want this to change. I want this to change. And it changes. First of all, it's very empowering. I have people who just try it for fun and they're like, wow, I think you tap into something, you know, it's like this thing inside you that clicks, like, oh my God, I did this. So that's the purpose of this film and this work, is to bring more evidence that the world and the universe doesn't just happen to you, that you are the one that can create the outcome that you want. That is the
powerful creator, right? That we, as spiritual beings in this human body, we are powerful creators. And what you are teaching is to create by design, not by sort of by chance.
Yeah.
You know, as you're going through life, you are, okay, I've got these blueprints and I've got these tools and I can follow and I can be this powerful creator and enjoy the rest of my life and have fun, isn't it? I mean, the purpose of being here, as you say, is to enjoy, to have fun, to be happy, healthy, to have the body to be healthy in order for you to be able to interact with your environment. It's incredible. And, you know, one of the things you probably came across is people, they go see perhaps a psychic, right? And the psychics say in the fifth century, you were a charismatic Christian and you were burnt at the stake. Okay, now I know why I am the way I am today. Or they go and see, you know, a therapist. Oh yeah, your father was overbearing and, you know, he was an alcoholic and da, da, da. And it's, oh yes, now I know. Or they say, okay, the Mercury is in retrograde and some planet 50 million light years away from, it's impacting who they are and how they are. And it's, okay, now I know. And, you know, their numerology and this, and they're looking for the things to actually reaffirm for them to justify. Say, okay, to justify, so, okay, I am going to stay stuck. So I know I am stuck, but I'm going to go and look for confirmation. And they surround themselves with people, with friends, with associates who can, you know, confirm the justification that it's okay. It's okay for you to be where you are, you know? And as you say, you know, it's, again, that's part of the illusion, isn't it? And I mean, it's incredible. My hat off to you and your team for creating such an amazing film to demonstrate. I mean, I know, like, you are very passionate about your work and the topic that we are discussing. We could talk for another week. I urge everyone to tell me the name of the movie and where people can find it. And also, I know you are a best-selling author. Do you want people to find more about you or your books, your work? Where can they find it? And tell us more about your work, where people can access it.
Yeah, the movie is Superhuman, The Invisible Made Visible. And they can go to the website, superhumanfilm.com, and they will see all the different platforms. It's on, you know, Amazon, iTunes, Tubi TV is free as well. But also on this website, superhumanfilm.com, they can see some classes also if they want to experiment and try, you know, like we were talking about telekinesis, remote viewing. There's a remote viewing experiment in there. So that's for this website. But
is that part of the astral projection?
It's different. It's different.
Oh, it's different.
So,
okay.
So remote viewing, the way the government taught it it's one sort of technique. I teach it differently. So they can watch it in a movie, but then on the website, if they want to try that, they will have a chance to experience both types of remote viewing. So there's that. And then, but if they want to work more on their healing, transformation, consciousness, you know, I have like 600, 700 classes and sessions on my other website, which is carolinecorey.com. And it's C-O-R-Y. People usually misspell that. And there they will find a lot of tools. There's a lot of free stuff as well. You know, my YouTube channel has hundreds of classes and sessions that people can do, reprogramming sessions, you know, realign with who you are. All these sessions also are free on my YouTube channel.
Amazing. And I guess your social media handles, they are there, like people, if they want to follow you through different social media channels, they can just click through your websites. Is that correct?
Yeah, and, on the website, they can see at the bottom.
And I guess, you know, your books are on your websites as well. If people want to, you know, find you on Amazon or somewhere else, you know, the things that you've published in the past. I mean, I know you've been
on the website.
You've been doing this work for what, 20 plus years? And, you know, it's like, it's a lot of work out there. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Well, there's one last question. I mean, I already have an idea what the answer is going to be, but I ask all my guests, what is the impact you would like to have on humanity while you are here?
Just change your perspective. You know, if I can just get humanity to change the perception, to accept that this is an illusion, it's all based on fear, and to just have the courage, that's the impact I would like to have. If I can provide any sort of tools, any sort of support, any sort of resources to help humanity have the courage to change, to become authentic who they really are, which is pure unconditional love, divine love, dissolve all the fears, then this would be a totally different society, different civilization we'd be moving to into. So that is the impact I would love to have.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. Thank you so much, Caroline. You know, I just have so many like more questions and ideas, and you know, because we clearly have our missions align, which is to, you know, make a positive impact on humanity through the work that we do. And you know, I would be grateful if we can collaborate again on something in the future to sort of share different audiences together, maybe even do like a live thing with a Q&A, and where people can actually experience transformation and healing like live in the webinar, right? So that would be incredible. Yeah. So thank you so much, Caroline. It was an honor to have you on my podcast, The Human Experience, and I look forward to interacting and working with you again in the future. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. This was awesome. Thank you.